45, huh?
Yeah, mate, aye, crack on.
So it's a new year, new season, and we're delighted this evening to be joined by Whitehaven's media manager and BBC Radio Cumbria's correspondent, Jordan Weir. Jordan, how are you?
Not too bad, Callum, thanks, and yourself?
Yeah, no, not so bad. It's good to be back. It's good to have a bit of live sport other than that kick chase rugby football and union on the television. But all three Cumbrian teams in the championship this season could be an interesting one.
Yeah, certainly could be. You know, it's fantastic for Cumbria to be back on the map if you really want to look at it. Cumbrian Rugby League has sort of been in the doldrums for a few seasons. You know, there was a period of time when all three of Cumbria's sides were in League One. Barrow got promoted at the expense of Whitehaven back in 2017 at the playoff final, and then Whitehaven eventually replaced them with their promotion in 2019, and Barrow being relegated at that point. But no, you know, for Cumbria as a whole, it's fantastic to have all three Cumbrian sides in the championship. And also, you know, these sides that they've got are also full of local talent. You know, Whitehaven's got promoted in 2019 with a locally based side. 50%, if not more, of their side this season is locally based. Workington would more or less be the same. Curtis Tier, who's been a fantastic player for Loughborough for the last few seasons, has made the jump up to professional there. I'll be honest, disappointed Whitehaven couldn't get him and seeing what he could do in the chocolate blue and gold. But you'll have had conversations with no doubt all three Cumbrian clubs, if not just at least the two West Cumbrian sides. And he decided Workington's the best option for him under Chris Foreman. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I've seen him as part of my radio coverage for Radio Cumbria, covering the NCL games the last few seasons, and even just before that, even just going up to the NCL games. And he's one that's always really impressed me. He was a community line a few years ago alongside Carl Dixon. So it'll be really interesting to see how he goes, making a big step up to the championship like Carl Dixon did a few seasons ago. But, you know, he's stepped up and championship rugby's really suited Carl Dixon even so much so he's took the captaincy this season and what only would be his second full season in professional rugby league after, you know, 2021 was only his first full season after 2020 was wiped out after 4 to 5 games due to COVID. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Dicko does with that one. And yeah, Barrow's full of local talent there as well, alongside a sprinkling of bigger names like Josh Woods, Jared Samet, Hakan Maloudi, you know, so but they've got the likes of, you know, Jake Carter, you know, Ellis Gillam, who's come down from Whitehaven. So, you know, there's a sprinkling throughout. Brad Carlin's been there for a number of years and experienced there and actually played 9 in the pre-season friendly against Workington a couple of days ago, which isn't a natural position for Brad, but just shows you that he's a man who can do anything. So, yeah, three Cumbrian clubs in the championship, fantastic for that. And to be packed full of local talent as well, but just a sprinkling of those who may be travelling up the M6 and the M62, but also bringing it over from Australia and New Zealand. It's exactly what Cumbrian Rugby League needs, and Cumbrian Rugby League fans will be hoping that all of Cumbria's Rugby League sides do well in 2022.
Yeah, no, definitely. Just going, touching on the friendly there at Workington Barrow on Sunday, it was mix and match as now you wanted to. I mean, you've got Hakeem Maloudi at 6, Tom Posh and, you know, John Unchin's playing at props that haven't played at props for God knows how long. But no, it was a good spectacle, and considering that there were two mates, it does give fans a lot of hope from both sides, really, that they could defy the majority of the pundits who have put them in 13th and 14th place, respectively.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, it was a bit of a mix and match. Both sides were missing a lot of players on both sides. Barrow 10 and 11, and probably similar with Workington around about the 9 or 10 mark. So, you know, it's not going to be representative of what them sides are going to look like for the majority of the season. But those that have played will certainly be enjoying their first 80 minutes of the season. As you mentioned, Hakan Maloudi played 6. For Barrow, you know, as you mentioned, Jordan Thompson and John Hutchins playing prop. Tom Bosch, you know, obviously normally a second row. You know, normally plays prop in his amateur days up in Ensingham, but, you know, won't have played prop all too often in the professional game. So, as you mentioned, yeah, a bit of a mix and match. And as I mentioned earlier on, Brad Carling sort of played 9. There was a number of trialists for both sides. you know, from the local Barrow area, and you know, in and around Seaton and Ellenborough and Cockermouth, all for Workington in there as well. So, yeah, not expecting that friendly to give too much away for the both sides' respective seasons. But as we mentioned, due to the issues that both sides have had, but expect that to be you know, a good 80 minutes for those that were involved, and then kicking on for both of the Barrows and Workington's pre-season. Barrows got another two games left. And I think Workington has only got the one against Whitehaven this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how Workington go after already having 80 minutes against Whitehaven, when they go against Whitehaven on Sunday. Obviously, this will be Whitehaven's first game. Pre-season can be funny with results. You know, a few years ago, back in 2017, when Carl Forster first took charge of Whitehaven, Whitehaven lost all four pre-season games. And some were calling for his head in pre-season because of the results that he got on that occasion. But it ended up Whitehaven being, essentially, if you want to look at it, it was a dodgy referee's call, which many still will disagree with. You know, with Barrow and Whitehaven ones will probably still disagree now about that. But,
The knock-on that never was that?
The knock-on that never was from Steve Roper, yeah. Like you say, many Barrow fans will say it wasn't a knock-on, and many Whitehaven fans still say it was a knock-on. It wasn't a knock-on, but... Yeah, so pre-season isn't the be-all and end-all. You know, it gives coaches exactly what they want for it, which is give players minutes. But in the game, I'm fully expecting both sides to be only naming a 17 and going with 18 interchanges rather than the usual pre-season bustle, which I think is all you need to know about what this Ike Salford Memorial game not only means to Workington, but also to Whitehaven and Cumbrian Rugby League in general, that they want to make sure that it's a good spectacle for the fans and that they treat it with the respect it deserves.
Well, quite right, Jordan, as well. We're just looking here at Ike Salford's portfolio there. You know, it's a portfolio that stretches back to 1953. And, you know, it's still talked about and respected now. Ike Salford there, the local amateur from Maryport there, represented Great Britain, the Cumberland side back in 54 through to 68 in Great Britain, 1958 through to 1962. He was also signed by Oldham for a world record fee at the time from Workington of, in today's money, £455,000. A year later, went back to Workington for another world, nearly £500,000, just and no more eclipsing the Wigan there.
I just think I lost you a bit there, Callum, but yeah, I mean, what you were going on was, you're back with myself now there, but he's just saying that, yeah, obviously, you know, like Southwood, obviously well before our time, but you know, he's still a name that not just around Workington but also around Cumbrian Rugby League. He also had a spell coaching, you know, as well. So, you know, he stayed within the game. You know, absolutely, you know, he's one of them rugby league legends that probably isn't talked about as much these days, just purely because that's where the game is these days. You know, obviously the Rugby League Museum, it's meant to be down in Kirklees and Huddersfield, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to be happening. And it's these sort of people that, you know, the memories aren't lived up to because of that archive that isn't on display anywhere. But yeah, you know, you speak to the older generation, and even speak to Jonty Gawley. He mentioned how, you know, when he spent his time at Workington as a player and as a coach in his later career, that Ike was around Derwin Park at the time. And you know, and as it says there on the town portfolio, Ike was always full of his Cumbrian wit. I never met him. I was far too young to be involved. Unfortunately, you know, to meet what sounds like a fantastic character for rugby league. But I think for both sides, those that the older members of both Whitehaven and Workington will remember Ike very fondly, and that's why when we do say it's Whitehaven and Workington, it's not just a friendly. It's never just a friendly between Whitehaven and Workington, but also to be able to honour the any rugby league legend, but especially one like Ike Southwood, who had such a distinguished career. Both sides will make sure that for 80 minutes they'll give a game that hopefully fits up to his name.
Well, no, yeah, just saying there before we did slightly lose connection, Jordan. Ike was a double world record transferer, been transferred from Oldham to work from working to Oldham for, in the old days there, £425,000, and coming back the season later for £500,000, £500,000. and it had just and no more eclipsed the record fee that St Helens had paid for Wigan for Mick Sullivan. So definitely a character and a half. As you say there, we are both who have had any sort of dealings with Ike. But a fantastic player overall. And, you know, as you say there, it should be a great spectacle and something that, due to COVID, has been lost in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, it was lost, obviously, at the start of last season. Obviously, there was a big disparity between the Championship and when that started, obviously, with the Challenge Cup, because only a handful of League One sides were involved in the Challenge Cup. And then League One starting much later than the Championship did. So, yeah, there wasn't a real opportunity for it to be played pre-season. I think there was discussions possibly play it towards the end of the season, but obviously when you look at the seasons that both sides had, the seasons obviously went late for both sides, so I don't think that was ever going to be a real possibility. But no, yeah, it's fantastic. You know, for rugby league just to be playing in general again and still be playing in front of crowds, obviously there was probably a thought at the two clubs that this game could have possibly been played behind closed doors. Obviously, Omicron's raised its head with COVID in the last couple of months, and especially the last few weeks in and around Allerdale and Copeland and Barrow, as well as we mentioned, the areas and the major areas in you know, the west and the south of the county that have really been affected. Barrow and Copeland were second and first, Copeland being first at point over in between Christmas and New Year for new COVID cases. So these clubs were possibly thinking that, you know, if restrictions continued and maybe you were even tightened, that this game was going to be played behind closed doors. And as much as obviously you did get 80 minutes into the lads and they still would have got that, you know, it's not what either club needed, because obviously friendlies shed gates and, you know, they really want the money in the club to be able to sustain these going forward and make sure that these two sides can challenge going forward. So it's fantastic that it's going to be able to play in front of the crowd, and hopefully what is a healthy crowd through at Derwin Park on Sunday, and these clubs can start getting money back into the coffers once the season gets back underway as well.
Well, it definitely will be a great spectacle, as you say there, and the crowds have definitely returned in numbers, just under 1,300. Watch the Barrow and work it in friendly up at Craven Park on Sunday in typical Barrovian rain, wind and whatever else it could be thrown off the Irish Sea. But no, as you say there, it's going to be fantastic for all three clubs. Really strange season last year. They went on a bit of a downturn at the start of the season, and Gary Charlton with that infamous stick seemed to beat a few heads together and made a late charge for the playoffs, winning, was it 9 out of the last 11 matches or something crazy like that to get into the playoffs, and didn't disgrace themselves at a big spending Halifax team, really.
No, certainly didn't. You know, as you mentioned, it was a season of two halves, and to be fair for Whitehaven, it was normally a game of two halves at some point. So you will have quite seen right. Quite often, as you would have seen quite often, Callum, covering for the local media, as you were covering a couple of Whitehaven games last season. Yeah, but no, it really was a season of two halves, winning two out of the first 10. And it looked like, you know, it's going to be a real challenge alongside Oldham and Swinton to stay in the division, and possibly alongside the likes of Dewsbury and Sheffield, but they never looked in any real danger. It always looked to be that the three sides you were sort of expecting, you know, Whitehaven, Oldham and Swinton to be challenging for what was to make sure that one of them weren't in the bottom two towards the end of the season. But yeah, and it seemed to be a big defeat for Whitehaven that seemed to really change their season round, which was the defeat down in London. And they were 12-0 up after around about 28 minutes. And then Chris Hankinson scored right on the half-hour mark. And Whitehaven still went in with a 12-4 lead at that time, but conceded 42 unanswered points. So conceded a point a minute in the second half. And I remember I was actually the summariser that day alongside Fraser Kerr on Radio Cumbria. And speaking to him after the end of the game, I was actually lost for words. And obviously, you know me, and anyone that know me, you know I'm not lost for words all that often. So you know, I was actually lost for words in what I'd seen and what a downturn in performance after that. But after that, Whitehaven won. I've just actually got it in front of me. They won 1, 2, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 out of the next 12 games, including eight on the bounce at home. So the only 20, defeat's been, yeah.
20 points out of the possible 24.
Yeah. The only defeats coming away to Halifax on the day that no one was really there because it was the Euro 2020 final, and you know, it was probably played in front of four men and the dog, and then a performance away to York, which probably was Whitehaven's worst performance in that latter half of the season on that afternoon. But the, you know, they won eight on the bounce at home. You know, for you know, even for a club like Whitehaven, you know, they hadn't done that in probably 15 or 16 years since they were in the pomp and challenging for Super League in 2004-2005. They made the recreation ground a fortress again. You know, a witness side come up here. It was a battered and bruised witness side who could only name 16. But Whitehaven didn't lift a foot off the pedal that afternoon and scored 64 points against witness. They went to Bradford on the last game of the season needing a result, 16-18-0 down, and then scored 36 unanswered points to get Whitehaven's first win at Oddsall in like 60 years.
Well, it was crazy,
I mean?
That one.
Yeah, it was a crazy afternoon. That game at Oddsall, you know, it looked like we've challenged so hard and as we had done, but we were just going to fall at the final hurdle, and something just changed once again. You know, the lads on the field, a real change onto the books. Dion Air come onto the field, and the game just changed. You know, Dion Osley's got a habit of doing that, and but the game just changed. But in general, yeah, it just seemed to be that London result, whether that was something the lads and go, you know, we know how we can play against these so-called better sides. And they did that, but they weren't able to complete it. And once they were able to put in 80-minute performances, not many teams in the Championship were able to stop them. You know, there was only, you know, in the form table, there was only Toulouse and Featherstone who finished one, first and second, respectively, in that latter half of the season, had better records than Whitehaven. So, if Whitehaven can do that once again, you know, season obviously it's going to be tough. You know, like so York didn't really match up last season. Newcastle probably didn't have the season they were expecting. Widnes probably didn't have the season they were expecting, but they do seem to have a lot of issues with injuries as well there. So it's going to be really hard for Whitehaven to match what they did in 2021. But with the squad they've got in terms of quality replacing the likes of Lachlan Walmsley and Louis Jufe is always going to be tough. But in the likes of Alex Bishop, Will Evans and Josh Martin, the Australian imports alongside Liam McAvoy there at prop as well, alongside Ryan King getting a full season, and if Guy Graham continues his improvements, there's no reason why Whitehaven can't be challenging again in 2022.
Well, no, not going to lie. I mean, anybody that knows Dion here knows that he's built like a bus and tackles like one as well, and you just have to speak to anybody that he hits. No, with that Bradford match, though, we were following that on the social media, and not going to lie, we did have a little chuckle at 18-0 down, and then when it come to 18-12, it was like, oh, hang on a minute, you know. And full credit to Whitehaven for that. You know, in the Championship, they were on their own. They didn't have any big gates from Barrow or Workington. They sustained themselves well, you know, were able to fetch in the likes of Jufre halfway through the season, Greg McNally, you know, as you say, Ryan King, who... So I've seen him play once. I think it was potentially Oldham that he played in. Oldham, I think it was that he played in.
Looked a
real, real talent. It's always one of those. The form book goes out of the window, whether it's pre-season or you're halfway through the season when you come to your derby matches. As we both know, it's a strange fixture because whoever seems to lose it seems to have the better season than the ones that win it.
Yeah, at times, and you know, obviously, you know, there was a period a few seasons ago where Workington had the rule over Whitehaven when Gary Charlton was in charge at Workington, and as I was reminded on several occasions for the next few years, there was a season where Whitehaven and Workington played seven times, and across pre-season, cup fixtures, playoffs, you know, they seemed to be joining just about every competition possible, and Workington won all seven. So you know that
gambusters.
Yeah, so I mean, like you say, you know, it was obviously a occasion there where Workington did have the rule over Whitehaven, but in the last few years, you know, whether it be pre-season or in the league fixtures, it seems to be Whitehaven slightly had the upper hand. As you say, derby fixtures, you know, the form, any derby fixture, whether it's Whitehaven, Workington, St Helens, Wigan, the whole derby, Bradford, Leeds, and Wakefield, Castleford, and I'm going to upset people because I'm going to stop there, because you could go and mention the derby fixtures forever. Dewsbury and Batley are probably one that you want to mention there as well, but form goes out the window. whether it's, as you mentioned, pre-season, whether it is, you know, a league campaign, playoff, you know, and anything like that. Form really does go out the window on a derby fixture. You know, big crowds have been here for this derby fixture in the past, and hopefully, not just on Sunday, but, you know, the Easter derby and the one later on in the season there as well, that, you know, both teams will see, you know, both clubs will you know, will, they've always said that, I'm not going down to watch that, they're only playing, and this is no disrespect to sides I'm going to mention, they're only playing West Wales, they're only playing London Scholars and such things like that. This season, these teams are playing Featherston, they're playing Lee, they're playing Bradford, they're playing Widnes, they're playing a big spending Newcastle, they're playing big spending York City Knights, who have spent money in the last few years to make sure they sustain themselves in the Championship. And so, you know, these clubs are, you know, the best of the Championship is going to be coming to West Cumbria this season, and Cumbria with Barrow there as well. And, you know, when these two sides do meet, it's obviously going to be fantastic occasions all round, in what is currently three scheduled fixtures with the pre-season. And if the summer bash goes ahead, as it normally would with derby fixtures, it could be four. But it's just going to be a waiting game for that. Hopefully the crowds return to both Derwin Park and the LEL Arena en masse and support Cumbrian Rugby League as it's sort of its renaissance in the last couple of seasons.
Just going off that then, Jordan, 2022 going to be a season like no other. We've got the World Cup at the end. We've got the Challenge Cup, as always, and the AB Sun Dex 1895 Cup. That's a tongue twister when you've never been in it, but we'll go with that. any surprises for yourself going forward this season? Surprise packages who do you think could pull a few shocks? Anybody that you think's, you know, early sort of signs that any side could sort of struggle?
I'm probably going to get battered for this one, but London Broncos, you know, obviously they changed to part-time. Jermaine Coleman's took the role there after Danny Ward had been in for a few seasons, and obviously Danny had left sort of when it was sort of become known within the circles there at London that they were going to go part-time for this season, and you know, he decided to leave then rather than going to the end of the season, and it sort of started, I think, sort of affected them. Tom's son come in, and you know, Tom's a coach. He's done a fantastic coach. He done a great job at Coventry, but he never seemed to be able to get as much out of the players as Danny Ward did. And yeah, I think the Broncos going part time. Obviously, the move to Wimbledon may have a renaissance for them and a renaissance for rugby league in the capital, but it's a real shame to see them going part time so soon after their you know, that season in the Super League, where, you know, it was one of the closest Super League relegation battles, you know, since Wakefield and Castleford played it out on that famous night at Bellevue. And, you know, it was kind of winner takes all. It'd been 2006 now, so, you know, 15-16 years ago, but, you know, it's really, you know, it's really, yeah, really. And I was only 12 at the time, so I mean, it just showed that, you know, it just shows that, you know, it's real disappointing that London haven't been able to sustain on what was a fantastic season for them. COVID won't have helped, obviously, in 2020, but then being at Ealing, and yet again, it's their nomadic status. And I feel just that, you know, having a look, it's not the strongest of squads. They have been able to bring in some fantastic players, but you look throughout the squad, it's not the strongest, and you feel if they do find defeats on the, you know, away from home, if, you know, they're going to have to be build up quite a fortress there at their new ground at Plough Lane, and they may well do, but I feel like London may be one that, you know, maybe people will be quite surprised if they don't challenge for the playoffs. And, you know, I'm not saying they're going to be in a relegation battle, but I just feel London do need to watch themselves, especially this season, because clubs will see them as vulnerable going down there, and feel like they can pick up a result. You know, it's going to be new ground again, as we mentioned, their nomadic status, so it's new ground for everyone, especially in the opening few rounds of the season. It's, you know, it's essentially going to be neutral ground until the players get used to being there and such things. So, yeah, I feel like London might be a vulnerable one. I'm not going to go against the predictions in terms of Barrow and Workington finding it tough. I'm not saying they're going to get relegated, but they'll find it tough. Why they haven't found it tough at the start of 2020, and I've said this several times in several people I've spoke to in several podcasts, that, and I say this in the nicest possible way, that COVID was a godsend for Whitehaven Rugby League that season. Because Gary Charlton and John DeGorley got an opportunity to look and reflect on what happened in them five or six opening league and cup games, and were able to step back and step up their step up their recruitment for 2021, and obviously did pay off in a massive way. So, not obviously, you know, that opportunity is not going to come along again, you feel, unless COVID does step up in a massive way, that a season would be stopped again. So, yeah, but I'm not saying, you know, they're going to find it tough, but, you know, alongside probably two or three other teams in the Championship who have been down the bottom for the last couple of seasons, you know, like to Dewsbury and Sheffield and possibly London, as I've mentioned there as well. So, I think, it's, you know, obviously last season was pretty much a done deal in terms of relegation in the last few games, as, you know, Sheffield and Dewsbury just stepped away in the last couple of games, and Oldham and Swinton couldn't do that, and obviously being relegated. But, yeah, I feel like there may be four to five teams down the bottom that may find themselves cut off. And hopefully, as I see it, being my connections with Whitehaven, that they are able to find a comfortable mid-table finish and challenge for themselves for the playoff. I'm not going to give you any predictions for relegation, because I think it is going to be tight. But in terms of that, I think, like it was mentioned, a possible shock of the season, maybe a vulnerable London side in 2022. Although I'll be very happy to be proved wrong.
It could also be very interesting as well. You mentioned there with the Broncos moving to Plough Lane and Wimbledon. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the ground there in Ealing was artificial.
Yes, it was.
And the ground in Wimbledon is full grass, so it could be interesting for those players at London that they're used to playing on artificial turf and that know how the artificial turf works to potential advantages. You know, you find that at Newcastle and Widnes potentially as well, with the way the ball bounces. It's more of a dull thud rather than a bounce. And the way that it spins, it could be interesting to say they're getting back used to that. The shocks there, probably, I'm going to go with York. I think York's had a season there that, you know, wasn't where they should have been based on what they've brought in. Love James Ford to bits, think he's a fantastic person and a great coach, but I do think, again, that York are going to linger outside of the playoffs. Will potentially make a late charge, depending on how things go, possibly. Again, though, with the relegations, we could struggle, so could Barrow. But again, a lot of it could depend as well on these COVID forfeits. If you've got to forfeit a match, I believe it's a 48-0 deficit. Why it's 48 points, I'll never know. But, I mean, imagine Wigan forfeiting to St. Helens, for example. They would never lose 48-0, or very, very rarely. But that could also come into play as well, the points difference.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could do. And obviously, it only seems to have been discussed about Super League. So you imagine it is going to get replicated in Championship in League One, but it only seems to be Super League clubs that's obviously seeing that 48-0. And obviously, it was probably the Super League that was really affected most with COVID performance, which is something you really wouldn't think about, because, you know, obviously the Championship and League One are mainly part-time leagues. In fact, League One is fully. There's only one or two sides in the Championship last season that you could really class as full-time. There's a couple of more this season. You know, obviously, Newcastle and League claim they're part-time, but, you know, with the staff and the squad that they've got there, yeah, majority full-time, the majority of them there at least. And whether I upset Mr. Beaumont by saying that, everyone else seems to upset me in rugby league, so I'm sure I'm back in the very long queue for that one. But, yeah, you know, obviously, you know, it seemed to be Super League that were affected most in 2021 with performance, and for whatever reason that may have been, obviously there was discussions after the Challenge Cup final about certain pictures that shown up on social media for Saints and Castleford. There was, you know, so meant to be social distancing, even though they battered each other for 80 minutes. And then, yeah. But obviously, you know, I think the RFL's trying to take a tougher stance. Clubs were, times probably got away with not having the necessary amount of COVID cases within the playing squad.
Bringing the lead slightly,
and possibly bringing in backroom staff, and obviously, you know, obviously all these people in contact, so you had to be sort of
sure.
You had to be sure and maybe thinking ahead about contacts and, you know, obviously possible exposure and such things. So, but I think the RFL, I think they're just going to go from day one, right? That's it. You know, we've got to put a tougher stance on it. We've sort of got to, you know, everyone will say we've got to start living with COVID in day-to-day life, and then obviously sport can't be accepted. You know, obviously, you know, if everyone's still having to go to work, you know, obviously the isolation rules are changing shortly in day-to-day life. For us who aren't lucky enough to be involved in the professional world of rugby league as a player, that, you know, I think it can't be any different for rugby league. So, yeah, tougher sanctions, if, for the want of a better word, going to be there, that if clubs do have to forfeit. Like you say, it only seems to be mentioned for the Super League. We'd imagine it'd be replicated for Championship and League One. And that's where, as you mentioned, if we obviously didn't mainly focus on the Championship this evening, that, yeah, it could be affected there because of the number of part-time clubs. You know, players are still going to work, they're still going home to families. And I've mentioned this, that obviously the NRL bubble seemed to work really well. You know, it's sort of the first professional sport to come back that wasn't stopped in 2020, and that seemed to really work for them. But it's not something that you'd feel with the salary cap restrictions and the lack of, let's be honest, the lack of finance in rugby league, that could, you know, that could really be brought into a Super League and definitely wouldn't be brought into a Championship or League One. So, yeah, it's going to be good. Yeah, sides could be really affected by that, and unfortunately, maybe really unlucky by that with injuries there as well. And they may be caught out, and that's maybe where, you know, a surprise is sprung. But you mentioned there York. I think it probably is a season for James Ford that if his side don't make the playoffs. And as you mentioned, I've spoken to James on a couple of occasions. He's a fantastic, fantastic bloke, and has done fantastic things there for York. And you know, we never want to see any coach, you know, be out of the game or lose the job in any way. But you feel if York don't step up this season, that maybe towards the end of the season, that James may have to move on, and they may have to bring new blood into York. And you know, I hope that isn't the case. I hope James Ford, you know, does good. You know, because York seem to be doing good things off the field, you know, in terms of what they've done in the last few seasons. Obviously, they moved over to the new stadium, which have been at, and you know, it looks like a fantastic facility. So, you know, a strong York on the field obviously will only help that off the field. And you feel that, so you know, like you say, we're all told if buts and maybes at the moment. We're only a week or so into the pre-season fixtures. There's only three fixtures really being played, apart from the couple across the Boxing Day. Boxing Day was only Leeds and Wakefield that played on Boxing Day in the end up. So there's only four to five pre-season fixtures being played. It's all if buts and maybes at the moment. We could look like absolute fools if we're listening towards back at the end of the season. But I think, as you say, Callum, we normally rightly sound like that anyway. So I don't think it does make a massive difference. But,
no.
It's just, like you say, you know, it could, a surprise could, as you mentioned, if you're looking for a surprise, surprise could be sprung from anywhere. I think this season, yet again, COVID's going to possibly play a big factor. And, you know, if a player's, you know, obviously on that and club struggles, that's where your surprise may sort of come from. But it's just a waiting game to find out and see what's going to happen in this fantastic world of Championship Rugby League.
Quite right. Jordan, it's been a pleasure as always. One last thing then before you go. Any early predictions for the potential winner there for the 1895 or the League Cup, as it might well be now?
The 1895 Cup, I think it's going to be, you know, I think it's probably going to be the top sides that go for that, because you know, them sort of top sides are maybe going to be able to focus on that, because I know the league campaign isn't going to be really majorly affected. Where, you know, if sides get to, you know, maybe the likes of Whitehaven, Workington and Barrow, that they don't want cup form to start affecting possible league form and challenges and, you know, such things like that. So it depends how the draw goes, but I wouldn't bet against Featherstone retaining that trophy this season. I think they seem to be able to go for it, you know, on occasions. And, you know, Brian McDermott that's in there now, and they may be able to call on their links with their dual registration partnership with Leeds, that, you know, players that aren't playing at Leeds maybe play 1895 cup fixtures, and that's still then not affecting maybe a squad for the league campaign. So yeah, I wouldn't bet against Featherstone going for the retaining that 1895 cup at Tottenham Hotspur. Obviously, not going to be played. It's not going to be played at Wembley. Obviously, going to be played at White Hart Lane before the Challenge Cup final and this season. And hopefully, crowds are in there again, and a big crowd gets in for the 1895 Cup final. But yeah, I certainly wouldn't bet against Featherstone returning that trophy, I think.
Well, I actually put my head on a very large chopping block, not because the head's large either, but very large chopping block, and said that Whitehaven would probably go on and do a win this year. Why that was, I genuinely don't know. I think as well with the league form, you know, you've got the likes of Featherstone and Lee and potentially Halifax, etc. They may well target the Challenge Cup potentially, as it's got more monetary value to it. I believe you still don't get any money in the 1895 Cup until the semi-finals.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too sure on how the 1895 Cup format's gonna play out. I'll be 100% honest, but yeah, there wasn't any previous any prize money, I think, to the semi-finals. And obviously last, obviously that was in the first season. Last season, obviously, it was the four challenge, four sort of sides from outside the top two divisions. Obviously turned up to be, obviously all championship sides, and they end up obviously joining at the semi-finals just purely because of COVID and obviously the reduction on that, how it needed to be with the season starting later. But yeah, I mean, a trip to Wembley with Whitehaven, well, not Wembley, as I said, a trip to Tottenham would be very, very nice with Whitehaven, and him not being to London Scholars and that then. Yet again, no disrespect to the Scholars, they're a fantastic club, but to be able to play at White Hart Lane, and Whitehaven pick the trophy up and possibly being able to do it myself, maybe a bit personal one here, but if I was able to do a commentary at Wembley and commentate on a Whitehaven victory for Radio Cumbria, I'd certainly take it. But yeah, like I say, I wouldn't bet against a Featherstone retaining that trophy if that's what they want to do under Brian McDermott.
Fantastic. No, well, back to the belly of the beast there, finally. And I say there, it is this weekend. It is Workington versus Whitehaven. One of us potentially should take a holiday on Monday. I'm going to stick my neck out and say it's probably going to be me. Earmuffs will be at the ready from 9 o'clock on Monday morning. But Jordan, all the very best during the week there. And hopefully Johnny takes his charges into a fantastic afternoon from 2 o'clock on Sunday. And believe it is on BBC Radio Cumbria from 1:50.
Yeah, around about 10 to 2 will be online, which you can get on the BBC Sport app. Twitter links will be posted by myself at Jordan_Weir14 and also from Radio Cumbria, that BBC Cumbria Sports. I'll be joined by the new Kells head coach, or returning Kells head coach, Peter Smith, as he's come down from director of rugby to take back up the coaching roads up there, up on the welfare in the pitch. So, yeah, I'll be joined by Peter Smith, obviously former player and assistant coach down at Whitehaven there as well. So, yeah, catch us around about 10 to 2. But if you can get through to Derwin Park, obviously put the money in the coffers. But up for all those that can't or maybe want to enjoy some rugby league from Cumbria, around the country and around the world, this Sunday, BBC Radio Cumbria online from the BBC Sport app on the BBC Sport website from around about 10 to 2 on Sunday afternoon.
Fantastic. Well, as I say there, enjoy the fixture. Don't rub it in too much. And all the best for Sunday afternoon, Jordan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Colin. See you again.
Cheers now.